I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, in anticipation of a new documentary airing next week, we're going to talk about environmental stewardship. My guests are Scott Lutaka, Facilities and Sustainability Manager for Piazza Produce, Christian Theological Seminary Professor Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about environmental stewardship in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to be airing next week here on WFYI. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Scott Lutaka, Facilities and Sustainability Manager for Piazza Produce, Christian Theological Seminary Professor Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you all here, and I should say to our listeners, because we did promote it, that former First Lady Judy O'Bannon was scheduled to be on the program. She's got a little bit of a bug and was not able to make it in today. Scott is ably stepping in for her, and he's also the newbie on the program. I think the others want to razz him just a little bit about that. So I'll start by asking the question, Carol, of you. Tell me about the documentary, about its genesis, and all of the other pertinent details.
Just about a year ago, Mrs. O'Bannon finished her most recent documentary with co-producer Gary Harrison on the contribution immigrants make to Indiana, and I was chatting with her, and she said, I wonder what I should do next, maybe something on the environment. So I went home and I wrote up, okay, here's something you could do on the environment. Here's half a dozen people who work all over the state, people like Jim Poyser here, and they know all the great projects going on, and it would be very encouraging. So much of the news about the environment is so negative, and it's really difficult and often overwhelming. So Mrs. O'Bannon's idea would be, let's find the people doing wonderful, positive, important work, the real champions for getting it right in our relationship with the environment, and let's highlight them. And her usual half-hour documentary very quickly turned into a full hour because we ended up profiling over 30 different groups working all over the state.
Which is a lot to get done in an hour. What's the title of the documentary?
The title is Courage, Brains, and Muscle, Our Environmental Champions.
Okay, and it airs when?
It airs next Thursday evening, a week from today, at 9 p.m. on WFYI.
On the TV side, yes.
Right, on the TV side, right.
Okay, so we've talked about this, and Jim, you've been on the show before. We've talked about some of these issues, but I don't think we've been on, you know, since the United States pulled out of the Paris Accords and some of the other events that have to be disheartening to people who care about the Earth and these issues. Is this documentary kind of a welcome tonic to that or an antidote?
Well, it's a welcome tonic just to be in this room right here. Carol and Scott are both amazing stewards of the environment. And they keep me positive, to your point, John, of just sort of a fusillade of bad news. I think what Bill McKibben has characterized as body blows, that every news story that comes across your proverbial transom is negative. The current IPCC report, the National Climate Assessment, we're seeing nothing but bad news. Of course, I can't resist adding that we're not going to have a white Christmas, you know, as much as we would like, and we see the seasons shifting profoundly. So I think we need a dose of Judy O'Bannon good news, and I'm so looking forward to this documentary.
So, Scott, tell me about, what a facilities and sustainability manager does for Piazza Produce, and how long has that position existed?
Well, John, I've been the facilities manager coming up on 14 years. I've been with the company for 22 and a half. And so the primary duties, obviously, are keeping the lights on, the refrigeration running for our 65,000-square-foot distribution facility, because we do have a lot of perishable products that we distribute to our customer base here in Indianapolis in a 250-mile radius outside of Indianapolis. So the sustainability title sort of was an add-on as the company achieved zero waste in early 2012.
So you achieved zero waste 6 years ago, soon to be seven?
That's correct.
How did you go about doing that?
In the first 6 months, back in 2005, when this position was granted to me, I noticed that the waste bills were, every month they were escalating and seemed apparently with no end in sight. So that prompted a conversation with our controller because I wanted to know, is this merely the cost of doing business or was there an opportunity that we could somehow tame this, what I perceived as an out of control cost to the company's bottom line?
And how did you go about doing that? Well, am I anticipating one of the stories in the documentary here, I presume? Or?
Oh, that's a very good possibility.
Okay.
I went in with several months' worth of invoices and had a nice conversation with the controller. And he said, funny that you bring this up because we had actually worked with a waste consultant in 2003. And I was very surprised to hear this. So I asked him if he had a copy of the report because I was very interested in learning about the findings that the consultant identified. And in his report, he had identified that about 50% of our waste stream was in corrugated cardboard. So if we could pull the cardboard out of the waste stream, bale it, we could sell it to a recycler, reduce our waste costs by potentially 50%, and have, for the first time, a new source of income through recycled materials.
So, Jim Carroll, is some of the problem here that too many companies, too many individuals aren't thinking that way, that, you know, that a lot of the approach when we talk about environmental stewardship comes across as, you know, like, eat your vegetables, just do this because it's good for you. But Scott's sort of saying, okay, yeah, it's good for you, but there are also ways to make money here and to be a lot more efficient by doing that. Jim.
Yeah. I know a little bit about Scott.
Okay.
If you email Scott and he emails you back, you see in his signature, Zero Waste Warrior. Mm-hmm. So this guy's on it. He is a warrior, and I think that's what it takes. I think a company or a business can look at the bottom line, and it may be a little theoretical to them, energy efficiency, swap out your fluorescents with LEDs, et cetera, et cetera. But I really believe it takes a champion, and I think that's exactly what Scott Lutaka is. And I think that's what this documentary is going to detail, is a whole bunch of champions.
So, Carol, tell me about—go ahead. You wanted to wait in.
One of the things we really wanted to show is that there are businesses that are figuring out how to do this, and they're all discovering, just as Scott has with Piazza Produce, that it's really worth it. It's worth it in many more ways than the bottom line, but it's also worth it on the bottom line. Subaru is a huge international corporation with the giant plant in Lafayette. They're saving, they told us, around $1 million a year by being a zero-waste plant.
And how did they go about doing that?
Same way he does, with people who are champions, who are in charge of making sure that they're having the kinds of meetings they need to figure out exactly the next step. One step at a time, especially. You can't do this overnight. You have to start with the low-hanging fruit, if you will, like recycling the cardboard, and then you move on and you start figuring out more ways to work with suppliers so that they're sending you just the right amount of stuff or configuring things so that it works well. And over time, everybody learns how to do it, and they get good at it, and they get a feeling of reward from it. It feels good to do it right. It feels great to meet targets on zero waste and to be able to say that you can do that. And, of course, the controllers love the bottom line part.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about environmental stewardship today on No Limits in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to be airing on the TV side of WFYI next Thursday. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Yes, Carol.
We ended up finding and profiling in the documentary around 30 different groups of a wildly different people doing very different things, very different places, faith communities, business communities, towns and cities, all over the state. But one of the things I've noticed, there's two things I learned. One is that they are all figuring out how to work with nature's creativity instead of against it. That is really the key. That's what's become clear to me in this process.
So they surf the wave rather than fight it.
That's right. They're surfing the wave instead of fighting it. They're discovering that nature has already figured all this out for a lot longer than we've been around. And if you pay attention to nature's processes for how you deal with waste and how you deal with resources, you discover that you can do these things. There's a whole new industry called biomimicry in which scientists are working with business to study these things and figure out ways to become more efficient and better designed for all kinds of reasons. It's really exciting work.
How did you go about identifying the 30?
We worked with and met with people who work all over the state, like Jim Poyser, like Jody Paris at Sierra Club, like Jesse Carbonda, the Hoosier Environmental Council. And they recommended people, and they also helped us by we created an email that they sent out across the state, a whole bunch of different sorts of stuff. And then we just got back proposals, people who wanted to be on it. We curated that and picked the ones that we thought would help give the best picture of what was going on across the state.
So it sounds like it was sort of a targeted crowdsourcing model here to some degree. Jim, you're leaning in.
Earth Charter Indiana literally wrote the book on this a couple of years ago. The work of John Gibson, co-founder and director of Earth Charter Indiana for so many years and still going strong in his mid-80s, much like Judy O'Bannon, still working to make Indiana a better place. He really marshaled dozens and dozens of people from around the state over the last 20 years to tell their story. So we published a book 2 years ago, Discovering Sustainable Indiana, and I think perhaps that book was the source of some of those ideas as well.
A major help.
Yeah. And go ahead, Carol.
The other thing is, it sounds like targeted, but we weren't looking for environmentalists. We were looking for ordinary people of all sorts doing this work. I mean, one of the most interesting cities in Indiana that's becoming fossil-free is Vernon, Indiana, whose mayor is a Republican. All of their government buildings will soon be entirely solar. They're doing it for the bottom line. This is not a partisan thing. This is about what's doing right.
And I did not mean, when I said targeted crowdsourcing, that's actually technically probably a contradiction in terms, but it was a way of looking at a broader picture and getting more voices from the state coming in. You know, in terms of the work, since it sounds like one of the book was at least part of the genesis, how did you go about identifying those folks, Jim?
Well, John Gibson was on the ground, so to speak, in all these communities. And there, a lot of word of mouth, a lot of crowdsourcing generating itself. And John would literally go and visit people and get their story. And 5 years ago when I joined Earth Charter Indiana, that was the gift to me, was to go around the state of Indiana and see all these amazing people, from urban gardens to solar panels on churches to you name it. It just turns out that Indiana's got a lot of people that care about the environment. It isn't a partisan issue. And it's just very inspiring to find all this out.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about environmental stewardship today on No Limits in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to air on the TV side of WFYI next week. My guests are Scott Lutaka, a facilities and sustainability manager for Piazza Produce, Christian Theological Seminary professor Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about environmental stewardship in anticipation of a new documentary that's airing next week, next Thursday, on the TV side of WFYI. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Scott Lutaka, Facilities and Sustainability Manager for Piazza Produce, Christian Theological Seminary Professor Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. So I want to talk a little bit, and I think I will start with Scott on this one, because what I hear also that's coming out of this is that that some of what it takes to be a responsible environmental steward is adapting a process and working a plan to some degree. If my math and my memory of your remarks is correct, Scott, you got to zero waste in early 2012, but the process of getting there started at least on your end in 2005, and in some ways in the company's end in 2003. So, could you walk us through some of the steps that you had to take, and as Carol was saying, what the meetings were like? I mean, what were the discussions?
John, that's a very good question, and again, it's a privilege to be here on the program today. So we used 2005 as our baseline year, even though prior to me coming into this position of the facilities manager and having a waste consultant work with the company previously, the only thing that really came out of that initial consultation was they did install a cardboard baler in 2003. I remember the day vividly as it came through the warehouse to its current location. But unfortunately, nobody championed the process, and there was no follow-up. The consultant wasn't brought back in for evaluation, to see how we were progressing and how we were doing. So, I was basically picking up those pieces in 2005, because I asked the question. I was challenging the status quo, if you will. So I met with that consultant over lunch. He explained his report, his findings, and I'm one of those trust but verify kind of guys. So I wanted to see exactly what his findings were. So he arranged for a waste audit, and that basically entailed having our trash compactor taken to the landfill, having the contents emptied out onto the ground, spread out, and I had taken a digital camera with me that day, and I took pictures of all the stuff that's in the waste stream. And I got to tell you, waste is not pretty, nor is it very aromatic. So That was the beginning of my education, because we verified that half the waste stream was corrugated cardboard, that we could actually pull that out. We could bale it and we could sell it and start down that path. And we did not have a zero waste plan. I didn't, you know, a true confession, if you will, I didn't know what zero waste was back then. It wasn't until many years later in 2011 through comprehensive recycling that I learned what zero waste was. And once I learned that that was 90% or greater waste to landfill diversion, that that really helped to motivate me to kick it up a notch.
So let me ask, I mean, is Scott, and I'll start with Jim on this, but I want to hear Carol's thoughts. Is Scott the exception rather than the rule here in the state? And if he is, what can we do to foster more Scotts and more Piazzas?
Well, you're doing it right now, John, with this show. First of all, spreading the word is really important. I'm kind of in a bubble as much as I try not to be. So I would answer your question by saying that Scott Lutaka, Eagle Scout, Zero Waste Warrior, has lots of comrades out there. Indiana Recycling Coalition, Indiana Food Scrap Coalition. There's lots of individuals and lots of groups. There's a Facebook group called Zero Waste that I belong to, that's always inspiring to see how people are just reducing their impact on the environment. So in the bubble I'm in, I happily occupy, I see more and more people, and I do see it as a transpartisan issue. And it's just so important to take care of our waste when you think about the embedded resources in creating something like a carrot, and then the climate impacts of throwing it away by not eating it. It really adds up to a huge environmental deficit. And if we can understand zero waste as not just taking care of what we produce at the end of the production process, but also what we can reduce at the source so that there is less to deal with at the end. It becomes a circular process that I think everybody can get on board with to the bottom line and to a better planet.
Carol, this is the same question to you. I mean, is this more the exception than the rule, or is was Scott just at the front end of what is a growing trend?
I'd say both. It's still a pretty small percentage of what people are doing in Indiana, but it is a growing trend. And the good news is you don't have to figure it all out as you go the way Scott did anymore. There's now so many resources that you can find online and other people, including people like Scott, that you can go to. You know, find, if you're a business person, find a business comparable to yours that's doing it and go ask them how they did it. If you're just trying to figure it out at home, look up resources online. Hoosier Interfaith Power and Light has all kinds of stuff on their website for families and for faith communities on how to get started and what they can do and the process you can go through. Things like that. It's no longer as difficult.
Jim.
Case in point on that, my organization is really excited about a zero waste cafeteria project we have going on right now in a number of schools. School 91, Indianapolis Public School, is really gotten about 75% into tackling a zero waste cafeteria process. There are resources. The tool that we began using was cafeteriaculture.org, which is a great resource, but there are so many that I'm finding. And then we have community partners like Scott himself. We do a climate camp with kids in the summer, and we'll visit Piazza because it's so important that young people, as young as 9, 10, 11 years old on up through high school, see with their very eyes what a zero-waste production facility actually looks like. And Scott will do a dumpster dive with kids, which is so powerful. And that's that process he describes about literally dumping your trash onto a tarp and looking at what you wasted. So there are so many tools out there for a zero waste approach. I'm excited for 2019 because we're going to have a lot of schools in the Indianapolis area that are going to be tackling this really important project.
We've gotten an email from our regular listener, Marion, and our email address, if you want to join the conversation that way, is nolimits@wfyi.org. Marion writes, thank you for this show. Please be sure to include discussion of the massive contribution of 5 decades of relentless expansion of livestock production in Indiana with construction of unregulated CAFOs. As an ethical vegan, I challenge those concerned about stewardship to consider veganism as a moral obligation. I get to guide companies throughout Indiana into sustainability, and I've seen some amazing growth in the past 5 years. A champion is great, but those without the bottom line will get them started. I say that energy is the gateway drug to sustainability, because once companies realize that sustainability efforts can save them money, they suddenly start seeing new opportunities. I'm honored to help them see these benefits through my role as that looks like it may be a different email. I apologize. So why don't we talk about the CAFOs first? Jim, why don't we start with you?
Well, there's no question that that animal agriculture has a huge impact on the climate through all phases of the production process. You hear all the time that the Meatless Monday cry, which should be a more days of the week than one, in my estimation. And you just have so many impacts with our agriculture system, and there are so many solutions embedded in our agriculture system as well. I think maybe Carol actually has a whole philosophy around that.
Carol.
Well, I certainly think those who have opted for becoming vegans are making a very powerful and important mm-hmm. ethical statement. I also think that there's a spectrum of honorable options here that don't necessarily lead to veganism, and that is to work harder at making sure, if you are a meat eater, that the meat you eat is produced more locally, is produced with more sustainable and greater health in mind. One of the big problems with CAFOs is they end up using a lot of antibiotics, mm-hmm. which has been proven to cause all kinds of problems in human beings, not just in animals. Not to mention the environmental impacts of huge lagoons and all of that. Mm-hmm. There are ways, and there are environments where having animals on the land can be very good for the land. And there are ways to mitigate the effects of the methane production of cattle and that kind of thing. So the discussion to have is not mm-hmm. do it this big industrial way or don't do it at all. It's let's figure out how to get this right, so that we're working with nature and nature's creativity instead of against it, so that we're having healthier outcomes for everybody, including the animals involved, and so that we're moving things in the right direction.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about environmental stewardship in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to air on WFYI's TV side next Thursday at 9 p.m., If you want to join the conversation, you can do what someone who got mentioned a little earlier has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by Jody Paris. Jody, welcome to the program. Jody, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Now I can, yes. What's okay. on your mind?
Good afternoon. I want to thank, first of all, Carol and Jim for their leadership in the state on these issues, and ask if they could talk a little bit about the importance of advocacy and citizens getting involved in advocating for change. So we've talked a bit about what individuals and businesses can do, but for example, Sierra Club, where I worked, has helped lead campaigns across the state to get utilities to make the decision to retire their coal-burning power plants, and that's been one of the most important things that we can do to reduce our carbon emissions is stop burning coal and produce electricity through solar and wind and clean energy. So, and that happened because pastors and, individuals, kids, all over the state have been advocating for change. So I wonder if they could talk a bit about that and how important that is.
Well, we'll go with Carol. Thanks very much for the call, Jody.
Thanks, Jody. Of course, two things about that. One is that yes, absolutely. At the end of the day, it's a real struggle as an individual to live a sustainable life with environmental responsibility because it's not built in, because everything around us is constantly ignoring all of that, so that it's really difficult. Only advocacy that helps to change policies of government, of businesses, of schools, everything at a more social level is really going to get us where we need to go. There's no question. And all of those entities respond to citizens who care. There's nothing greater. I've been told I'm a Presbyterian and a person of faith, and I've been told again and again, people of faith often don't show up at these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that voice really means a lot to people in the legislature and others, so it's important.
How much of this is also about, it's to some degree I'm hearing changing the narrative too, because the perception, the dominant narrative for probably 30, 40 years is that you could either have, you could protect the environment or you could have growth, economic growth, but you couldn't have both. And to some degree, what we're hearing is that was a false choice all along. Carol, I know, wants to weigh in. I can see Scott leaning in, and I'm sure Jim wants a piece of that one, too. So you start us, Carol.
Yeah, the second thing about that, which is related to that, is that the Sierra Club and Jody's work with all of these citizens' action was very important to NIPSCO, the Northern Indiana Power Company, taking the time to stop assuming they needed to move to natural gas some coal and look at the numbers for moving directly to green energy, to solar and wind. And lo and behold, they discovered it was going to be cheaper to skip natural gas and go straight to green energy, and they've just recently announced they're going to do that. That is huge. That's proving that it's just essential. And the jobs versus the environment thing, right this minute in the United States, there's more jobs in green energy than in coal, oil, and gas combined right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that we're losing all these jobs if we go to green energy is just not true. It's different jobs, but it's jobs that are healthier for everybody. The communities are healthy. They're good paying. It's well worth doing.
Scott.
Thank you, John. I'd like to address Jody's point about advocacy, locally and here around the state. The IRC, the Indiana Recycling Coalition, it's not the Indianapolis Recycling Coalition. It is the Indiana Recycling Coalition. They have great programs, IFSI, Indiana Food Scrap Initiative, for example, a program that I'm also involved with. Just recently joined the board of directors for the IRC. So I would encourage the public, it's one thing to advocate, but let's get engaged. Let's be part of the solution, and let's stop being an armchair quarterback. Membership, join these organizations. IRC has license plates, so that's a great way to help show your environmental enthusiasm and providing financial support and donations as well. Earth Charter Indiana, Hoosier Environmental Council, USGBC Indiana chapter, the USGBC nationally. I was instrumental in helping to develop the True Zero Waste Program. And this is a certification program for businesses as well as communities. Piazza Produce was the first zero waste certified business in the state on Earth Day 2014. And to date, there's only two companies in the state. American Licorice is the second, both certified at the gold level. And then, we've touched on green economy jobs. These are very important. Recycle Force, for example, Earth Mama Compost, Green with Indy, Green Cycle of Indiana, and then your local waste haulers also have programs. But the waste haulers, you have to challenge them. And this is coming from the business aspect. You know, knowledge is power. Most of these waste haulers, and they're not going to like to hear this, they're not going to come to you and be proactive and say, Mr. or Miss Customer, would you like to be sustainable? You have to go to them, and you have to drive the changes within your organization.
Jim, you get to bat. Good news is you get to bat cleanup. The bad news is you get about 30 seconds to do it.
Oh, that's terrible, because I have to tell the story of this water bottle, because both strands of our conversation come together in this water bottle from Oakland and Elementary School. These are elementary school kids who convinced the mayor of Lawrence and the city council to pass a climate recovery resolution for that city after having done so in Indianapolis. So these kids, we got into the what I called the false dichotomy argument of environment versus economy. I had to explain what the word dichotomy meant, and it was kind of a struggle of a conversation. And lo and behold, these kids came up with their own tagline for their group called Kids for Climate. I'm talking fifth and sixth graders. Their tagline is, without the earth, there is no economy.
We are talking about environmental stewardship today on No Limits. My guests are Scott Lutaca from Piazza Produce, Carol Johnston from Christian Theological Seminary, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about environmental stewardship in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to be airing next Thursday on the TV side here at WFYI at 9 p.m. My guests are Scott Lutaca, Facilities and Sustainability Manager for Piazza Produce, Christian Theological Seminary Professor Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser with Earth Charter Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can do it in several ways. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Alan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Alan, you're on the air.
Well, thank you, John. The reason I'm calling is we would like to convert our home into a more green-friendly entity, getting off the grid if possible, to allow us to leave a smaller carbon footprint behind, and also in case some cyber terrorist gets lucky someday and crashes the grid. We've read all of the reports about their unsuccessful attempts at many of the grids around the country. It just takes one successful one, and we'd like to protect ourselves in case that ever happens. Trying to find a resource that would guide me to articles, literature that would lead us successfully into that path. Do you have any references of must-read articles on how to?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll see what we can do. I think probably taking the larger part of just how you leave a smaller carbon footprint and get off the grid in a bit. Thanks very much for the call, Alan. Jim, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I you'd think I would have a ready answer for Alan about that. Would it be okay if I gave up my email address for Alan to contact?
Course, that's your choice.
Alan, why don't you hit me up, because I'd love to connect people in this around this larger issue. So you could connect with me at Jim Poyser, that's J-I-M-P-O-Y-S-E-R, at earthcharterindiana.org, or go to our website, earthcharterindiana.org, and there's a contact form on the website, and you could reach out to me, and I will help you find an answer to that. It's very intriguing.
And I might add often, you know, these conversations on No Limits go beyond the hour on our Facebook page, so people should feel free to reach out to all of you through our Facebook page and leave questions or comments there, and I'd ask you guys to come back and check on that. We've gotten an email from a listener named Kelly who says, I get to guide companies throughout Indiana into sustainability, and I've seen some amazing growth in the past 5 years. A champion is great, but for those without the bottom line, the bottom line will get them started. I say that energy is the gateway drug to sustainability, because once companies realize that sustainability efforts can save them money, they suddenly start seeing new opportunities. I'm honored to help them see these benefits through my role as the sustainability manager for Purdue MEP. So, in some ways, is this... it's the question we left the last segment with. Is it really about getting people to see this conversation through a different lens, to think conservation actually as opportunity for growth as well? Carol?
I think that's exactly right. In fact, a couple of years ago, I was at a conference on water issues, and my small group was asked to discuss a problem within one of our communities, and we started talking about one person's town was having flooding problems. And at first, all of the answers that people came up with were hardscape engineering answers, build your walls, do all this kind of stuff. And I finally said, Can we change the way we are thinking about this and ask ourselves if we can work with nature's creativity instead of against it, what do we come up with? Conversation instantly changed completely. All of a sudden, people were talking about bioswales and analyzing the watershed and finding the places that would be good places to let water accumulate when the water's high, and rain gardens that you can put in on sidewalks, all those kinds of things. These were the same people in the same conversation, but the way it was framed changed everything. So it's really important to keep asking that question. How can we shift that?
Well, and how much is it? Because at least what I'm hearing, Carol, is it's some of it is tone here, too. It's not exactly the right term, but it is, you know where I'm going with this. It is not you have to do this, but it is you have an opportunity to do this. You're leaning in again, Carol, and I know Jim wants a piece of it, too.
Well, that was the second thing that I learned in the process of visiting all of these people across the state, which is that doing the work this way is very satisfying and very energizing. And if you offer it to people as a, we can do this, and here are people who are doing it, and here's how excited they get and how energized they get, that changes the whole feel. And that's what gets me energized and my students is finding out about the ones who are really starting to get it right and how much they get out of it. There's actually a real spiritual dimension to it, too, but we can go there later.
Okay, Jim.
We've had a lot of success at Earth Charter Indiana just elevating the voice of young people. If young people are properly instructed in climate science, and the instruction is also about how does municipal government actually work? Who should I talk to? Who can I get a meeting with? We've had kids all over the state of Indiana meeting with elected officials to talk about this issue. So the call to act on climate is a very different kind of call when it comes from a kid, whether it's 10 or 11 or 15 or 17 or 22 years old. This is their future, and we have really messed this up for them. And so when you can get a kid speaking respectfully in a public forum to elected officials and appointed officials, I think there's a moral persuasive power there that is equal to none other.
We also have heard from a listener named Sandy via Twitter. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Sandy writes, how about compost pickup like Portland, Oregon has? I live in a condo, so can't have a compost heap. Good idea, Jim?
Great. There's a business in Bloomington called Green Camino that's partnering with the city and doing just that. Scott Lutaka mentioned Earth Mama and Green with Indy, a couple of local entrepreneurs. And I think that the curbside compost pickup is part of the Thrive plan for Indianapolis. Go to thriveindianapolis.com. The plan has been released. Everybody should go onto that plan, log in, create an account, and make your comments. And that comment there would be very important to be heard by the city of Indianapolis.
We are talking about environmental stewardship today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Mac has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mac, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Great show. I'm a local architect and a lead consultant, and I would love to talk about the impact of green buildings in Indiana. However, I'm actually calling in because one of my other passions is as a beekeeper, and being a beekeeper for about 12 years now has raised my awareness about the fragility of species, such as all of our bees, including our native bees and pollinators in general. And it's also just in the past couple of years raised my awareness about the monarch butterfly as a great example of an amazing animal that does an amazing migration to Mexico annually. And what I wanted to mention is that locally, I've been able to utilize county grants here through the Hamilton County Soil and Water District and also state level grants. Church I go to has a couple large campuses in Hamilton County, and we have put in native prairies to support pollinators, and we've been able to leverage grants from the county and the state to help that happen. And as a homeowner, I was able to use a what they call backyard grants through the county to we planted 1,500 native wildflower plugs here on our property. And not everybody has the space to put in 1,500 plugs, but these grants are for, you know, any size property. And so you're doing something locally to support what's really kind of endangered species and our pollinators.
Mac, let me give the panel a chance to respond to that, because you've given them a lot to chew on here.
Well, I think Mac and Alan need to get together, because Mac has really figured out how to find all sorts of resources that Alan was struggling with.
Carol.
One of the things this illustrates, and that I'd like to point out, is that a lot of people think that doing this environmental kind of work is something that you have to either be an expert to do or you have to be fairly wealthy to do. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, anybody can grow something on wherever they live, one way or another. And for all of human history, low-income people have grown their own food for the most part. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of people finding ways to recover these traditions in their communities of growing food, of keeping bees, keeping your own chickens. That's actually legal in Indianapolis to have your own chickens. I didn't realize that. Ways to do this that are healthier for everybody and that don't require enormous amounts of money.
Again, we're talking about environmental stewardship here on The Limits. You can join the conversation by doing what Bruce has done and giving us a call at 866-476-3881. Bruce, you're on the air.
Thanks, John. I'm so glad you're having this program. I just spoke with a guy at IPL this morning because I'm on 100% of my energy I get from wind and solar through the Green Sense program. And he said he just bought another big chunk and the price should be going down even more for 2019. My bill is like $170, and I only pay like 95 cents more a month to get all of my energy from wind and solar. And he said it grows by only like maybe 1% a year, their growth in that Green Sense program. And I just think that people don't realize, you know, that for 90 cents more, you can make a big, big difference. The second comment is, I'm here in Annapolis. I live close to downtown. I just bought 2 days ago a Honda Clarity, and it's a plug-in hybrid. So I can go 47 miles on just electric. I live downtown. I work in Carmel. I can go for a couple of months and not have to buy gasoline. But it's not an all-electric car. So if you're afraid of an electric car, you've got backup gas, and you can go another 200 miles when your electric runs out. The last thing about that is you can use where you see these blue Indy cars parked around with five or six spots. You can use those, and you pay $20 a month, and you can use those to charge your car. It's worth more than that, $20 a year, and then you pay like $2 an hour to charge your car. I would pay twice that just for the premium parking, because I can park in any of those and park my car. And that's just an awesome thing.
Thanks very much for the call and for the suggestions. Scott, you know, that sounds like it's there's some seriously entrepreneurial thinking going on there, too, that, you know, I mean, and that it gets that flipping the mindset that we have been talking about, that ultimately you stop seeing it as something you're prohibited from doing, but ways, obviously, to just be more efficient.
Absolutely. You know, it takes that creative mindset to think outside the box, to challenge the status quo, if you will, to be able to identify new opportunities. And that was something that, again, I'm very fortunate that the ownership and the company gave me the latitude to pursue this. And I certainly didn't do it with the idea of being here today on this radio station with our panel and with you, John. You know, we were recognized for something very special that we accomplished. And that first recognition came with Mayor Ballard's 2012 Sustainability Award. Mm-hmm. And again, we didn't do it for the awards. We didn't do it for the accolades. It was strictly initially for the business case and to help the company's bottom line. And being a produce distributor, obviously, you know, we're very sensitive to where our products come from. You know, they come from around the country. They come from here produced locally when in season. And so, you know, we're very in tune with produce, nature, and our responsibility with how we manage our waste stream.
We're getting close on time here, and I think my listeners would not forgive me if I didn't ask Carol what it was like to work with Judy O'Bannon on this project. Do you have any good stories to tell us?
Well, now, it was a great privilege to spend that much time and to travel with her and her husband, Don, across the state. She has, I don't think she's changed a bit. She's in her 80s, now 83, I think, hasn't lost a bit of energy, and she hasn't lost her curiosity and her joy in meeting people. And that was so fun to watch. Everywhere we went, and she likes to go a day ahead and take back roads. She loves to stop in little places and walk in and start talking to people. And there were many conversations that were had and discoveries made because we did just that around the state, not just around meeting the people we were actually filming, but everybody. Judy is the same with everybody. She's interested in everybody. She's cheering everybody. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that for her, it's always comes down to communities building community with each other. It's all about relationships. It's all about knowing that you have right in your community the resources you need to get this right and do it.
So we are coming to the end of the program now. Probably ought to walk through the details of the documentary again. It airs, obviously, next Thursday, correct, Carol,
correct.
At 9 p.m. What's the title again?
Courage, Brains, and Muscle, Our Environmental Champions.
And, of course, two of the guys who have been part of this discussion are going to be prominent in the documentary, correct?
Certainly their work is.
Their work is. Okay. Well, and we will see and hear a little more about that. So, Jim, Scott, are you guys nervous about seeing yourselves up on the screen or excited?
I hope I won't be, but I do hope a number of our kids are. And I want to pick up on what Carol was saying, because those relationships, that community building, happens right here on this show. And I listen all the time, John. And what's great is people call in. You think about the last couple of calls we got. Alan, then Max talking about the extraordinary emissions coming from buildings, right? Mm-hmm. And then Bruce calls and talks about the green power option. So just in those calls, kind of knitting them together. And then to go back to Jody, IPL that Bruce was extolling a couple minutes ago, they're going to go through their 20-year planning process in 2019, and it's a great chance for advocacy. People, get involved.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Scott Lutaka, Carol Johnston, and Jim Poyser, for what's been a lively conversation. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting station.